Welcome back to Yafu Nafu. I'm Jalindo Fool, and we're back together with Brother Anthony. Guess what we're doing?
Mama Africa.
That's right. We're going back to Africa, baby.
Absolutely. Lots to talk about in Africa. Big country. Big, not country. Africa is not a country.
It's a continent.
It's a continent. Exactly.
Look at that.
I did that on purpose.
It's a continent. So last time we talked about all the baby animals that you went and visited on your trip. And I think today you wanted to go and discuss, it's more animals, but more of a safari that you went on.
Yeah, or whatever we want to discuss about the trip, the animals and the national parks in Kenya and the safaris that I went on.
Let's try and blend them together. Let's start out with, where was your first safari and what was that like? Because when I think of safari, I think of like Walt Disney World, Animal Kingdom, and you're in the
right
on the tram thing.
So nothing like that, except actually kind of like that. What I mean is the first safari I went on was in Nairobi National Park. And that's literally part of Nairobi, technically, the city of Nairobi, which is about 3 million people. So it's right on the edge, right outside the airport there. Why it's kind of Disneyland-like is because you get in these safari vehicles where the top pops up and you stand up and you're going on these dirt roads and these animals are all over the friggin' place. So it's kind of like you're on a tram driving through these areas. Because Nairobi is heavily visited, the animals are acclimated to these vehicles. So they're not frightened by them. And so some of the pictures I sent you, actually the zebra pictures I sent you were from Amboseli, which is a highly traveled as well, a lot of vehicles driving through there. So the animals aren't afraid and they'll just stand on the side of the road and they won't run away from you and they won't, they'll just stand there because they know that they're not going to be injured by either the humans or the vehicles.
Almost like seeing cows when you're driving through Wisconsin.
Yeah. They sit there and they look at you and they're like, okay, get back to eating grass. And they all get back on their, on their hooves and start eating. So it's quite interesting because you could get very close to these animals. You can't leave the vehicle because they are wild animals and a lion's a lion and a lion could get hungry and perhaps attack you. And like I said yesterday, giraffes are big animals. And if you get close to them, they could kick you or, run you right over and stomp your head.
So right.
Or it can be dangerous.
Did you see a lion out in the wild?
Yes, in Amboseli National Park, we saw a pride of lions. There was 8 of them that we could count that were visible, and they were stalking a herd of zebra.
Wow.
And it was just, every Wild Kingdom show you watch, Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom when we were kids, and National Geographic, live right in front of you. These animals doing their thing and just being methodical about it. And the zebras weren't running and they're looking at their predators and these lions are just chilling. And one of them would get up, walk a few steps, sit back down just a little closer. One started walking around the back end of these zebras. You could see what their strategy was. It was very interesting to watch how methodical these animals were when confronted with animals that are probably, in the long haul faster than they are or have more endurance than they do. So lions have to be these ambush predators. Really, really cool. Really extraordinary.
So how many safaris did you go on?
Really 3, because Nairobi National Park, went to Amboseli National Park for a whole day safari, and then spent 2 days in the middle of Tsavo East, where the Athumba Hill camp was with the elephant reintegration unit orphanage that we talked about last time. That was hours of driving through the national park. So we saw various herds of elephants, zebra, giraffes. We didn't see lions on that one. And so basically 3 of them, and even just right close to Athumba Hill camp in Tsavo East, right before we got there, right in the middle of the road, was a massive elephant, like a tusker, with big long tusks, and just standing in the middle of the road and walking back and forth and eating the vegetation on the side of the road and walk to the other side and coming closer and closer to us. And we would back the car up because you're not supposed to interfere at all. And we were on its terms. It was very interesting to watch these elephants in general, how aware they were looking at us and sizing us up. And eventually this big old bull walked off the side of the road and allowed us to pass. And right when we passed, walked back onto the road, just got out of the way. So it was really a really cool experience to these animals that we grew up seeing in the zoos, and they're not in zoos.
So the first safari that you went on, was that the first one?
No, this is Nairobi National Park, right outside the city of Nairobi, was the very first one. And that actually does not have elephants. It's not big enough.
Now, why is it not big enough? What do you mean it's not big enough? Is it enclosed?
It's not enclosed. There are barriers here and there to keep them out of private land. It doesn't have enough square mileage or square kilometerage to sustain an elephant herd, because elephants will walk anywhere between 50, 100 miles a day, looking for water, looking for vegetation to eat. They'll wander around quite a bit. And this park just is not big enough to sustain a herd of elephants. It can sustain everything, all the other bigger animals. I don't think there was cheetahs there as well, but it can sustain impala and gazelle and ostriches and giraffes and other herbivores, but lions as well. Lions don't need that much territory. Elephants just need a lot of room to roam.
So these parks have barriers around the whole thing, so these animals can't stray from that park.
There's not barriers around the whole park, no. And this is where you run into a lot of human wildlife conflict, the edges of these parks, because you have humans that will put up cornfields and the elephants will go, fuck, hey, look at this. Here's a whole cornfield here. Let's go eat it. So a lot of, like the orphans, for example, are products of human wildlife conflict. Some of the orphans get separated during the melee when humans try to chase the elephants off, and some of the baby elephants can't keep up, or they go run the wrong direction.
Okay. But this first in Nairobi, that this mm-hmm. first safari that you went on, there was no elephants because it's not big enough.
Correct.
So, but the animals just all naturally kind of just stay in that area for the most part.
So the city side, like right by the airport, there's a huge fence, and that huge fence goes on for a very long while until it gets more towards the outlying areas of the park. And then their fence is here and there, but then there's like a river. So the animals do and can wander off the actual park property. And then that's when, again, you have this human wildlife conflict. And so potentially that can happen. But the animals do learn, okay, every time I go over here, I get harassed and I don't want to go over there anymore because there's asshole humans that are going to give me a hassle or throw a spear at me and hurt me and all this kind of stuff, which happens not very frequently, but it does happen.
Okay. So it's just they know better than no reason to go and leave this area here because there's plenty to eat, and they just kind of learned their lesson. Okay. I was just wondering how it was that, you know, you go on the safari and you manage to see these animals if they're able to just go and, you know, kind of take off.
No. So yes and no, like I said,
right.
The whole park is not fenced in. Important parts are fenced in, critical areas where they're not, you know, they can't cross the highway or the roads or anything like that. Again, that's where you run into a lot of human conflict, particularly when we're talking about, like this past year was a drought year.
Right.
And so the animals tend to wander a lot more. There's not enough food anymore. So they're going to wander off of the park grounds and they're going to try to find whatever they can eat anywhere. But also they're searching for water, and you find like baby elephants, for example. Several of my babies were found in wells or in mud holes because they were drying up and they weren't on park grounds. But somebody found them and took care of them or pulled them out or
gotcha.
Saved them.
So the are they called park rangers?
Yeah, park rangers. Yeah.
So there is a drought, will they try and provide water in some way for them? Or is it just like, it's just all natural, whatever nature is doing?
A fantastic question. And these days there are a lot of boreholes, artificially drilled holes to fill up water areas. So they do try to help all the animals.
Okay.
So there's a lot of areas which drill these artificial wells throughout the park and make these big old pools so that animals can drink, so they have enough water to survive. Again, not again, but if you think about, the animals didn't have just a postage stamp to live on historically. So only 7.5% of Kenya is protected. 100% of it, the animals used to wander around on. But now they only are protected on 7.5% of all of the land of Kenya. Where do the animals want to go? They want to go on their natural corridors that they've been using for thousands of years. Animals don't recognize human boundaries. They don't recognize lines on maps. They don't fucking read maps. So, right. So they'll wander when they need food. They'll wander when they need water. And so to try to prevent all that wandering, that's why they're assisted with, you know, drilling these water holes and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's no different than the humans, you know, depending on where you're living. And if you're in some third world country where they're fleeing because of the chaos that's around them and there's no food or a shelter, that's why they go beyond where they were before.
Yeah, that's, you know, outside of like just pure war and the potential to die because of those kinds of things, you're absolutely correct. A lot of refugees are just because of shortages either in food or water, period.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember late Senator Paul Simon from Illinois.
Yes.
He wrote a book all about water and water resources, and it was all about how wars of the future will be fought over water and water resources.
Really?
Yeah. And increasingly we see people getting more and more like stingy, and this is our water, this is not our water, and blah blah blah, and so on. Humans move because of water, animals move because of water. Every organism on this planet is restricted by finding water.
Every living creature needs water.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay, so from that safari, then you went on to where? What was the next one?
So the second safari was in Amboseli National Park, which is on the border with Tanzania and a little bit east of Nairobi and on the border of Tanzania. And that's a much, much bigger park where there was a lot of elephants.
How big was that one? Do you know with the square mileage?
Yeah, 392 square kilometers or 3,100 square miles is the ecosystem, the protected ecosystem. So the park itself is smaller than that, but the ecosystem is much bigger.
Yeah, Chicago is 231 square miles. So it's bigger than...
It's bigger than Chicago. 151 square miles.
All right. That gives you know, people that are listening, gives them a better idea.
So how big was Chicago?
231 square miles.
Oh, so it's smaller than Chicago. It's 151 square miles.
Well, you're saying the ecosystem was around 300.
Well, the ecosystem was 3,100 square miles. So much bigger. But that itself is 151 square miles.
Okay. All right. Well, that gives me a little bit better idea. But that's still big.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
So what was the difference between going on that safari and the first one? Besides that being a lot more, you know, now you've got elephants.
So a lot of the animals were acclimated on that safari as well. And so you got a really close look at them. There was a lot more gazelles running around. And it was more of... So the backdrop of Nairobi National Park is the city of Nairobi. It's right there. You can see it. Here is in the middle of nowhere. So it's more like, you know, what you would see, you know, wildlife documentaries and stuff like that. It was just miles and miles and miles of grassland, huge, huge flocks of flamingos, all sorts of other kinds of birds there. There was a bird called a bastard there. I'm not even joking. That was about 1.5 meters tall, about 4.5 feet tall. Just really a beautiful bird. This thing was
4.5 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, figure
the size of my mother,
the ostriches, which we saw a lot of ostriches as well. Ostriches are like almost 8 feet tall. These birds are massive. They're dinosaurs. They're massive, massive, massive birds. But also, you know, one of the most impressive things, you know, and seeing the lions stalking the zebras was awesome. But there was a whole herd of about 30 elephants that passed right in front of us, literally, you know, 2-3 meters in front of our vehicle, because there was young within this herd. And they got to the road, stopped, like the matriarchs, looked, checked this out, started to proceed, like made a head shake back. They started walking, and then like the fourth or fifth elephant would stop, be like, let others pass, sit there. They were like guarding the whole herd the whole way and making contact with us, eye contact, moving their heads back and forth, looking back behind them to make sure everyone was together. And okay, it was wow. Impressive to see this conscientiousness and this, you know, protecting the herd and protecting the young of the herd. And something I didn't realize is elephants can actually hear through their feet.
They got those big ears and they're listening through their feet.
They got them super huge fucking ears, and they actually can perceive and interpret vibrations through their feet and understand what those vibrations mean. So elephants.
So quick question. So do their elephant ears even have a purpose other than swatting away flies?
So elephant ears, one reason their elephant ears are so big is to keep their bodies cool. So it's a physics property that the larger you get, the less surface area you have per unit volume. Hence, it's harder to cool down or heat up that volume. And so that's why cells in your body are so small, just on a trajectory, because then you could actually have physiology go in and out of a cell and chemistry go in and out of a cell via simple diffusion processes. You need a lot of surface area per unit volume. That's why cells are so small.
Okay.
If you're that big as an organism, you need to create more surface area. That's why elephant ears are so big, and that's why they flap them, because they're loaded with capillaries that keep them cool then when they're flapping so they don't overheat.
Okay. So just to clarify.
Yes, they can hear with their ears.
Okay.
Yes. But they also make sounds that are unaudible to us because they're outside of our hearing capacity, that are so low, we can't perceive them. But they can perceive them, and they can perceive them through their feet. So they actually pick up vibrations through their feet. They actually can call to each other over literally miles. And
with their feet.
I don't know, completely through their feet. But they could understand vibrations through their feet and understand what's going on. And if they're closer to a little herd, or if there's water in that direction, or whatever the hell is going on. And they also are the only animal that can actually smell water. So yes, wrap your brain around that. Their trunks are so sensitive, they could actually smell water underground and start digging up with their feet underground and like come up, you know, like dig into a water table and water will bubble up and they'll start drinking. They got to smell water.
So like when you saw those elephants, did you ever like cut the cheese intentionally to like turn their head around and go, hey,
hey, what are you doing?
Who cut the cheese? I got a sensitive nose here.
I ate bananas and drank beer. That'll give me some bad breath. And I just,
what about this? Is it true that elephants have an incredible memory?
They have probably one of the best memories of any animal on the planet. Absolutely. And it's all, so they're not elephants have culture, and elephants teach each other different things. And they actually have this. So there is I forgot this. I meant to look up this lady's name. She's actually compiling the vocabulary of elephants. So all these little squeaks, grunts, groans, growls that they make, calls that they make, actually all mean different things. They could actually like interpret this is going on over there and communicate that to other elephants. And so their memories are unbelievable, but they also can remember after years, different individuals, different ways to, oh my gosh, the last time this happened 15 years ago, like, and it was a drought condition like this, I had to go over there and find water. And they actually do that. And all of that is, again, not born into them. It's all taught to the other elephants. And it's generally done through the matriarchal lines. Like the matriarchs control the herds. So it's fascinating. So this one researcher is actually compiling the elephant vocabulary too. And she could actually understand what elephants are talking about.
It's interesting that the matriarch controls the herd. Then you've got the mother tree that controls the forest.
Right. Do you see a pattern here?
Yes. That, wow.
Right. It's similar to a couple of shows ago that we did together, and all the women control Rwanda.
Right. Right.
And it's a progressive society.
Yeah. And they have Women's Month, and that's it.
Right. Because every other day is Man's Day.
Yeah. Let the men go and fuck everything up for 11 months, and then we'll let the women, you know, have 1 month out of the year.
Right. So, yeah, Elephant Society, I don't claim to be an expert. I'm not at all, but it's...
And, yeah, what you just shared, that was eye-opening, man. And that's incredible.
And so, like, when we were in Tsavo East at the reintegration unit, I told you this one elephant came back, had been out for... who had been in the wild, like, living wild, but sometimes the wild orphans come back and visit and say hello and so on. And it came back for breakfast one day because they throw them, like, hay for breakfast. And so they get all happy, and, you know, and some of the wild orphans come back. And then after that, when the sun comes up, and it walk over, you know, about 50 meters away and put its trunk straight up. And one of the keepers was like, yeah, trying to find its wild friends right now. And it was making these, you could actually hear these audible grumbles, calling for his wild friends. Then they might be 5 miles away or 4 miles away, but they'll hear. And he's trying to sniff them out that they can detect. Like,
that's amazing.
It's really amazing. You know, these.
That is amazing. That's incredible.
Intelligent. And again, intelligence is a human construct, how cognitive they are, and just really impressive animals to watch their interactions and how they deal and communicate. Really, really fun stuff.
What was the third safari?
The third safari was driving into the reintegration unit in Tsavo East National Park.
And that was like a 2-day driving trip?
So it was, we drove in all day and then we stayed at the camp. Again, it was more like glamp camp.
The camp right in the middle of the...
It's in the middle of the park. So a couple of things. So now the park, this park is much, much bigger than the other two parks with a lot less traffic. So these animals actually were aware and didn't necessarily like just stand right next to, like, we came across zebras, the zebras would take off. So they didn't, or giraffes, we saw some giraffes would take off. They wouldn't just stand there. So they're not acclimated to the traffic or cars.
Okay.
So they'll move away, you know, they're more leery of what the hell's going on around them. They haven't lost that sense of fear for vehicles or humanity, like the other parks that were small that have a lot of traffic going to them.
Were you ever like in danger of being attacked by a lion? Like if you went out, like, did you go hiking or you don't go hiking? Either you're in the camp.
You're not supposed to go hiking. I walked around here and there, like, you know, there was like baboons all over the camp. Like they would come through same time every day. And so I'd try to go out there and, like, you know, make friends with them.
Did you make friends with them?
They didn't mind me, you know, but they were kind of moving through and they just went on their way. You know, they weren't that interested. And one night, one of the people working at this camp and told us, like, don't leave like sandals or shoes outside of the tent because there's a hyena that comes around and will take them.
And be laughing the entire time.
Be laughing at in the morning. Right.
They get their shoes.
People lose their shoes because the hyena comes by and takes them. So I was sitting out late one night because I wanted to see this hyena. And I was sitting in the little place we were eating. And it was all open, you know, like there's a little tiny wall, maybe 3 foot high that went around this place, you know, really beautiful area and sitting there. And I'm like, what the hell is that over there? And I look over there and it was a friggin' hyena, like walking up to me over there. I'm like, look at it. And so I think this thing is going to actually come into like this closed off area. It didn't see me, didn't know I was there. And I'm like, you know, an animal that you startle can get nasty, or an animal that feels trapped can get nasty. So I wasn't afraid of this hyena. I didn't think it was going to do anything, but I'm like, if it comes into this area that's kind of closed off and then it sees me, then it might get like, you know, start protecting itself.
Like, whoa.
I thought it was going to walk through this, like these little swing doors, and it looked at me, like put its head up, looked at me, and then it just took off. And I was like, damn it. Like, I didn't get a picture. I should have let it proceed. But I was like, if it gets in here, then maybe I'll be taking on a hyena. And, you know, I don't know if I want to do that right now. But again, I wasn't afraid of it or anything like that. But I guess I was. I was afraid of it getting trapped and feeling I was trapped. And then it had to gnarl its way out. And I might be like fingerless right now or something. But really cool. Beautiful animal.
Okay, so you were there for 2 days.
Yeah, two nights, 3 days, basically.
So on that one, were you like during the day, then you got into a Jeep and you guys went driving around and then you came back?
Most of it was just wandering around the area around the camp.
With the rangers?
No. You can just wander around on your own.
Okay.
You know, you just weren't supposed to wander so far off because there are cheetahs and, you know, lions and shit that can eat you, stuff like that.
Right.
So,
well, how do you know how? I guess you know that you've gone too far when you get eaten.
Yeah. Last year, three French guys that tried to cross a river, their vehicle got stuck. So they made a bad judgment call. Their vehicle got stuck. They decided to try to hike out. And I think one of them got eaten by a hyena.
Really?
And I don't know if I don't think all of them got eaten. I forget the whole story, but there's wild animals out there. It can happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen, you know, necessarily. It's a rarity, you know. Right. And I said, well, those guys should just climb trees. I'm pretty sure hyenas don't climb trees. No, I was never.
Climb the tree and then the hyenas just at the bottom, just laughing at you. And
making fun of you.
Making fun of you.
Silly ass.
Calling his friends over.
Yeah. Right.
Look at this.
Boy. So everything at the camp was revolving around, you know, visiting with the elephants and spending time with the elephants. And so the elephants wake up at or are let out of their stockades at 6 a.m. So you're up at 5:30. You go, there's a short drive, you know, over to where they are actually the stockades are. They let them out, and then you're there until the sun's up, like 8:30. You know, because the elephants are hanging out, you're kind of interacting with them. So Ngekwe was trying to sniff out the friends that could be like over a mile away. They were like, their noses are so sensitive. And then they bring him into the mud.
What a way to start your morning, man.
Oh, yeah. So then watching the elephants scratch each other and scratch their asses and so on. And it's hysterical. And then at 11 o'clock, you go to this mud bath, this big pond where they go in and the elephants go swimming. Elephants love to swim. And they're like playing grab ass and jumping on each other in the water. And then there's these big mud piles that they all go rolling because mud is a protectant. It's sunscreen, but also an insect protector. So they get dirty and muddy and create this coat on them. So you're there for like an hour and a half watching the elephants play in the mud. And you're standing right there like the elephants walk right up to you and are like looking at you like, hey, what's up, dude? And like, take a trunk out and poke you a little bit, which is awesome. And then they come back and then you go back and you eat lunch and then you go back because they're coming back in at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you stay there for another 2-3 hours. So it all revolves around being and seeing your orphans, being with them and seeing your orphans and the other animals that you see are either driving in and out or what happens to be, you know, running around the camp area, which were a lot of baboons. A hyena was there one night. An elephant walked through one night, a wild elephant, and lots of different kinds of birds and, you know, lizard kind of things and so on. So
that just sounds so stress-free, so just like laid back, you know, that's incredible.
You can't even imagine how much you could learn from just sitting there and watching other animals or watching nature. And I mentioned something yesterday, or not yesterday, the last time we were on, that, you know, I consider myself a kind of a continuum of all species. Like, I don't consider humanity a separate species, and elephants are a separate species, and dogs are a separate species. Like, there's this continuum of all this one species, and that's it. Like, where we've faulted with kind of, you know, I'm going to get a little political here, with political or socioeconomics and whatever you want to call it, in the Western world is seeing ourselves as separate from nature when nature is part of the politics. Like, you know, politics, there's a continuity of environment and ecology that should be included in politics, but it's not. And it should be included in the well-being of humanity, which it's because it's necessary, but it hasn't been considered and it's only being considered right now. And so the deeper philosophical, like, boy, are we really behind in the way we think about things in the Western world, is not only are we part of nature when we thought we were separated from nature, but we also can't exist without nature. And we shouldn't be talking about conservation. It should be part of our psyche. It should be part of our everything. Every move we make should be based on conservation. Why do we have to have these programs about conservation? From day one, we should be groomed about nature and about the importance of nature and conservation of nature and how important other species are.
Because we just want to go and take and take and take.
My point being is that's only one philosophical approach that's been the Western approach, basically rooted a lot in the bastardization of the Judeo-Christian Islamic approach. And, I say bastardization because there's very little that actually dictates the dominion of life and the usurping and taking and taking and taking of life that's written in any philosophical writings, regardless of where you come from. It's all about living with nature. So there's a very small population that has usurped and taken over our thoughts or the way we conduct ourselves. That's my point.
Got it.
Indigenous people thought necessarily they were all part of nature.
Right.
And when I've taken my classes to meet indigenous people around the Great Lakes, and they refer to rice as their brother, like wild rice. We count on our brother. We take care of our brother so our brother can take care of us. We take care of all of our ecosystems so our ecosystems can take care of us. So anyway, it's a different point. It's a different continuity and a different type of inclusion.
It's a great way to go and be educated though. And have that instilled into people so that they understand that more rather than just being, deniers of whether it's, a global warming or, the endangered species as if it means nothing. No, it means something. And we need that and for us to survive, but we're not educated for that. And I think that's part of the problem.
Agreed. I think there's a failure in our education system. And maybe we could do another episode on this because I've been in education and been a professor for so long. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but part of the education system is purposefully keeping people dumb.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, we'll do that another time.
Yeah. We're not going to go there right now. We're not going to do that.
No.
We're talking about lovely elephants and lovely animals and hyenas laughing at us.
Right. Exactly.
And baboons with their shiny asses.
Nice. And elephants that can listen with their feet. That blew my mind.
One last thing I want to say about elephants, and I think this is really, really, really super cool. Okay. So there's three species of elephants on the planet, right? There used to be 200 and some. Throughout evolutionary history, there's been 200 plus species. There's only three species. There's the Indian elephant, and then there's two African species. The Indian elephant, okay, Elephas maximus, actually is more closely related to woolly mammoths than the African elephant. I just want to throw that out there because I thought it's really cool tidbit of information. They're actually woolly mammoths, the Indian elephants, or close related to them. So just evolutionarily, they were separated and you had various species and so on. Anyway, that's a pretty cool tidbit. So
nice. Woolly mammoth. Yeah.
And then still got gorillas to talk about.
Yes. Yeah. You're going to have to come back and we're going to have to go and talk about that. There's plenty of stuff that we still need to go and talk about, not just the silverbacks. And then also just, I want to learn more about the people and the culture and the food.
Absolutely.
And your experience out there. So
perfect.
Yeah. But this was great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Let's consider it.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, until next time, all you Yapu Nafus out there, take care of nature because nature's going to take care of you.
There you go. Perfect. Well spoken. You're smarter than you look. I always say that.
All right. Ciao.